Verizon Wireless.
We cannot complete your call at this time. Please check the number and dial again. 0018008. Announcement 2.
A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, hello.
And out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And we have Gila.
Yes, you do. Good evening.
We do not have Alex this week. You know, I didn't get a chance to really read the email, but maybe I skimmed it too fast. But he's auditioning for an episode of Survivor. That's how I read it. Okay, well, whatever. Wish you best of luck on that, and I'm sure he'll be back next week. But we have all kinds of things to talk about here on this this edition of the show. All kinds of things about hacking, technology, the future, mistakes that are being made, scandals, that sort of thing. We have Overtime that follows this show on YouTube. Just go to Channel 2600 on YouTube at 8 o'clock, and you can phone in. You can be part of the conversation. You can hear us ramble on a bit more. We'll be talking about Hope. A lot of people have questions about that. I got to see the Nikola Tesla rooms at the New Yorker Hotel, which is where the conference will be. Boy, that was interesting, where Nikola Tesla lived and died in the New Yorker Hotel right here in New York City. That's pretty incredible. I've never seen that before. That's the incredible part, that I had never seen it before. A little bit of history there, a little bit of hacker history, I guess you'd say.
Very cool. I look forward to being a bit closer to that chunk of hacker history.
Oh, indeed. But we have some interesting news items here. I don't know if you guys have been following this. We have a couple of small stories, smallish stories, and we have a big story. So let's start with a couple of the small ones. This has to do with people and the so-called smart glasses, which, we've seen a few of those around. This is a story, it came from BBC, about Alice, not her real name. And she was covertly filmed by a man wearing smart glasses. He then, believe it or not, requested money to remove the video from social media. She contacted the man who posted the video, telling him it made her feel humiliated. But when she asked for it to be taken down, was told that he would only remove it as a paid service. Now, Alice is one of many women who have spoken to the BBC about the distress they have endured after being recorded and posted online without their knowledge or consent. BBC contacted the man who filmed and posted the video of Alice. He refused to be interviewed, but in an email said he does not seek to cause distress or harm. Well, guess what, pal? You're doing it anyway. Alice was walking into a London shopping center when she was approached by a man wearing smart glasses, which apparently she didn't know at the time that they were recording her. In the moment, I just thought, hey, this guy's just trying to talk to me, chat me up. I was hoping that he would leave me alone eventually, but he did actually follow me. The video was then posted on social media, viewed about 40,000 times, but Alice only found out about it after a friend sent it to her. My initial reaction was complete shock. He had no phone. He didn't have a camera directly in my face. And videos like this are often posted on social media. Basically, this one was about giving dating advice to other men online by apparently talking to random people. Alice contacted the BBC following an investigation which exposed how smart glasses are being used to create harmful content by male influencers after a woman from Brighton spoke out. Now, Alice contacted the account that posted the video of her asking for it to be taken down. She told the man who posted it that it made her feel humiliated, and in the email she received back, he said he would remove it as a paid service. and she says that made me feel exploited and powerless. She added she never considered paying the money, and she reported the incident to the police, who opened an investigation, but despite initial inquiries, officers were unable to progress the investigation due to limited information. The story just keeps getting more and more bizarre. When asked about his attempts to charge her money, the man initially said he did not require payment in exchange for removing content and was open to reviewing any situations where there had been any misunderstanding or miscommunication in specific instances. But he did not remove the video. The thing that's really annoying here is that this guy did not give permission for his name to be revealed by BBC. I don't understand how you can go and film somebody without their permission, without them even knowing there's a camera involved, and post that, get away with it, and yet you get to say to the people asking you, what the hell are you doing? Don't use my name. I wish to remain anonymous. You get to enjoy that, but not the people that you victimize. So I would say, BBC, you probably know who this guy is. Let his name out, you know? Let's see how he reacts to being in the public eye when he doesn't want to be in the public eye. You know, it's one thing to film people in public, or to film people when they know they're being filmed. And, you know, they may not wind up looking very good, but if they agreed to be filmed in the first place, that's just, you know, the hazard that you go through when you're being filmed. Or if you're a public figure, you know, of one sort or another, okay, you're always on camera in one form. But in this particular case, where somebody is just walking into a shopping center and, you know, you approach them with your nerdy glasses, and anything you say to them now is a permanent record for everybody to see, that's just not right. And I see this as a possible future that we seem to be tumbling into. Any thoughts, guys?
It may be the future, but this is also so the past. This is a thing that has happened in so many ways, because every time there is a new recording technology, people are going to find ways to use it to be creepers. I don't think there's really any way around it. And I think about, you know, people who would, like, put early video cameras in public toilets because that's the kind of thing they wanted to do. And people didn't know, and people didn't consent to participating, but they did. But the other thing I was thinking about was, a few weeks ago, I had a doctor's appointment, and they sent me to get blood drawn. And in the middle of the blood draw, I screamed and pulled out my phone and took a picture. And the tech said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I'm fine, but there's a sign on the wall that I thought was amazing, which had a big sign on it that said, no audio or video recording. The use of any AI-enabled technology with audio or video recording capabilities, including wearables such as glasses, hats, pins, or other incorporated apparel, is prohibited in this facility. Please disable recording and AI functionality before entering."
Wait a minute. That made you scream?
I was so excited to see that.
That you immediately violated the rule by recording it?
No, I just took a picture.
That's recording.
This is audio or video recording. This is a standstill picture.
I don't know. It's too bad Alex isn't here this week. He could weigh
in on this.
Yeah,
well. But I think this is the thing. You can. People are going to be sneaky, and people are going to be creepy. And I'm also reminded of when I lived in Minnesota, and they passed a concealed carry law, and the state policy on what you had to do if people weren't allowed to carry concealed weapons on your property was to put up a sign that had a specific font size and a specific wording that said you're not allowed to carry guns on this property, but there was no other way to check on it. There was no teeth in the administration. And this, again, people are going to be creepy. What is it that can be done to stop this?
It's a specific kind of creepy, too, because this is a misogyny machine that is, you know, this category of thing. I think the vast majority, and I don't have numbers in front of me or data to support this, but I'm going to go out and say that my hypothesis is that this is men being creepy at women and then using that content to entertain other misogynists. There is a huge following online for people like this who just want to see women being taken down a peg for being women and things like that. And that sort of thing has been fueled by every sort of technology you could adapt to the purpose. And now it's all the more out in front because these glasses are very easy to use to be a creep and to be the specific kind of creep who takes videos in which they intentionally harass a woman, make her look bad, make her look, you know, whatever, then put the video online to entertain other creeps and then try and extort the subject of the video by saying, I'll take your video down if you pay me money. It's extortion via smart glasses these days.
Instead of extortion via smartphone. I mean, there were, probably still are, men being creepy at women and female-presenting people when Pokemon Go was a thing. Right, you'd see people on the train and, like, ostensibly they're playing Pokemon Go, but they were taking pictures. People were trying to upskirt on Pokemon Go. And that's, so again, the tools may be different, but this is not new. It's gross, and it's frustrating, but it's not new.
I just wanted to add, it stands to reason, I mean, I've talked about it before as like a behavioral thing, but if we're at a point where people can't use these things and don't use them in responsible or respectful ways, like a civil way in public space, much in the way you would expect people to act with any other camera, you know, asking permission or, you know, generally keeping your distance and, you know, don't violate people's space and their privacy. But another aspect of this, it seems to me that there should be a recourse or people should be demanding or asking for a way to opt out. And that would be the kind of thing that, we could do in an event of like a situation where social norms aren't really, enough of a guardrail, then another approach, I think, is opting out. And what I mean by that is, like, doing it in a sort of mechanized way or automated way where you force it in real time, because I agree these other ideas after the fact are fantastic, but since these are computational photography devices, what's so difficult about having some kind of signal or use some method of connectivity or a beacon of some kind that immediately blurs or otherwise obfuscates somebody who has chosen to force an opt-out on devices like these, especially in the event that we're to accept it widely and that it becomes a real hazard, there should be a demand for this additional feature, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that, so that people aren't, as we're kind of theorizing, more or less powerless to really kind of abusive behaviors with this stuff.
Right. And also, you know, what Gila says is absolutely true. This is nothing new. But what is different here is that when somebody is caught doing this, they're not brought up on charges. Rather, they're allowed to continue. So when someone is filming, you know, a bathroom or a changing room, something like that, they usually get brought up on criminal charges for invading privacy. This particular case, it shows up on YouTube, shows up on Meta outlets, TikTok, all over the place, and you really have to fight like hell to get it taken down. And that shouldn't be the case. It should be something that should be easy to take down, and if somebody is doing something like that, they should be banned from that particular site. I think that's happened in a couple of cases, but look what this poor person had to go through to get to that stage. You know, I think also what Kyle is speaking to is you know, technological solutions to this. And, you know, don't tell me there's not a technological way to detect if you are being recorded by somebody's glasses. Or, you know, it's going to be contact lenses at some point. The technology is going to keep getting better and better. There are good things we can do with the technology, but there are always bad things as well. We need to be prepared for that and not just, you know, accept it. This is the time where the reaction dictates how this will be integrated into our daily lives. If this is something normal, yeah, we're being filmed all the time and everything we say will be used against us, or no, we believe in privacy and we're going to defend it.
Yeah, pretty much. And, yep, the countermeasures angle to this is really interesting. I'm interested to see if the clever folks out there have technical things that we can do to mitigate this sort of thing. There is an Android app out there called Nearby Glasses. It tries to scan for, I believe, the Bluetooth signature of these smart glasses and will let you know if it finds it somewhere in range. But, you know, if you're on a crowded subway and this gadget tells you that someone nearby is running these glasses, what do you then do in response? I mean, all any of us can do is just try and be a little more alert.
Good question, though. What do you do at that point? You know, being confrontational is not necessarily the answer unless you're being targeted yourself. But, you know, knowledge is the important thing, and being aware that somebody is up to something or that you are being surveilled either by an organization, a government, or just one creepy individual. The important thing is to let people know that's happening. All right, another interesting story here having to do with our future and what artificial intelligence is doing to us. Well, this is a weird story. I believe you found this one, Rob. It's in Georgia. It's a warning for many parts of the United States hastily approving data center developments without first, and take note, people, updating their water systems to better monitor for severe upticks in usage. Yeah, on Friday, Politico reported that one of the country's biggest data center developments had guzzled nearly 30 million gallons of water without paying for it. Even worse, the water grab came at a time when nearby drought-stricken residents were warned to restrict their personal water consumption, and some reported sudden decreases in water pressure. An investigation conducted by utility officials in Georgia's Fayette County found that the Quality Technology Services facility, it's the worst possible name they could have, Quality Technology Services had two industrial-scale water hookups that weren't being monitored. One water connection had been installed without the utility's knowledge, and I didn't know you could do that. You can just install you can install a connection without the knowledge of the utility. Wow. The other was not linked to the company's account and therefore wasn't being billed. Now, QTS eventually paid about $150,000 for the water, but there were no consequences for exceeding peak limits established by the county during the data center planning process. Frustrating residents, the county declined to fine them. They declined to fine them. Wow. Fayette County's water system director, Vanessa Tigert, told Politico that the decision was partly because the county blamed itself and didn't want to offend QTS. God forbid we offend QTS and the AI overlords. They're our largest customer, and we have to be partners, Tigert said. It's called customer service. A little, yeah. All right, fine. I'm just detecting a bit of an attitude.
Can everybody else become customers somehow?
Yeah. So, notably, the main reason the water usage was overlooked is that the county is transitioning from outdated water meters to a smart cloud-based system that really is not very effective. It's supposed to make it easier to trace leaks and other unexpected drains on the county's water system. And I suppose, you know, if you cause leaks, then you'll trace them. So, yeah, okay, there's a win. Tigert also told Politico that the county failed to notice the water usage because it's understaffed, explaining that the only worker available to inspect meters is spread pretty thin. It sounds like a you problem, basically turning into a all of us problem. This is something that's being reflected all throughout, the world, actually, where these data centers, AI companies, are using a huge amount of resources and either not paying for them at all, paying a very minimal amount for them, or paying for them and wasting them and basically making everyone else suffer just so we can have our jobs replaced by artificial intelligence. Or am I being too critical here?
This story is fascinating. I mean, the whole idea that you could imagine you or I or any company we control accidentally using and not paying for 30,000 gallons of water and or 30 million gallons of water, rather, during a drought and not getting in trouble for it. That is fascinating to me. And this whole attitude that the county said, well, they're our partners and we have to keep them happy. I mean, I've been in an abusive relationship before. Girl, he doesn't love you. Get out. And this is amazing that this is even a thing. But it is. And, local governments have gone in on this whole let's build the data centers because AI will someday be a thing that works attitude that is fueling this stuff is going to backfire in spectacular ways.
And the thing that it was making me think of was this meme that I saw going around last summer, which said, it's so cool that cities are like, pretty please only turn on your AC if you're actively dying and don't go below 79 degrees, while the AI nobody asked for is given half the power grid to make images of a hot girl with five boobs. And so last year, the electric grid.
Mm-hmm.
This year, water. Mm-hmm. Is AI going to suck up all the oxygen next year?
Don't give it ideas.
Wow. In a report on Monday, some entity known as The Information explained why the water supply question is a problem for the entire AI industry to solve, not just data centers, which are already finding ways to reduce and reuse water. Citing research from a water technology company called Xylem, The Information reported that the water toll of AI is far greater at semiconductor factories and the power plants electrifying chip making and computing than at the data centers themselves, although it seems to be high just about in all of those places. As hyperscale data centers from tech giants like Meta, Google, Microsoft perhaps increasingly rely on power for cooling, the demand for water to cool down power plants will explode. According to experts, it doesn't help that 40% of data centers and 29% of global chip fabs are built in water-stressed areas. Over the next 25 years, AI-associated water use will more than double. So we have some real problems ahead of us if we don't do something about it, and I don't see enough being done about it.
No, indeed.
All right, so the big story, which I'm sure many people have heard about, is this... this school app known as Canvas. We've all seen this in the news, right? They were hacked. They were hacked bad. They wound up having to pay a huge ransom amount, which we don't know the total of, to get data back. I'm ignorant about this. I have no idea what Canvas... I mean, I know everybody uses Canvas. Schools everywhere use Canvas. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of students, apparently, are affected by this. Does anyone have a clue as to what Canvas is used for?
To my understanding, it is so a popular cloud-based hub for schools. So it's, I think there's grades and there's tests and there's notes, and especially as, you know, people are moving, schools are moving to more remote learning. I saw a stat that 41% of universities in this country are using Instructure, and just
the parent company of Canvas.
Right.
Okay.
And hundreds and hundreds of K-12 school districts across the country and around the world, actually. And you can have your class notes, and you can a learning management system, this is from the Instructure website, gathers all course content, daily lessons, assignments, tests and quizzes, feedback and grading. In addition, it handles student-educator communications and serves as a place for instructors of learners to meet virtually.
Can I ask a question? Why? Did we lose the ability to do this? Because, you know, when I went to school, we were able to do all that, and we didn't need some company remotely someplace doing it for us or telling us how to do it. You know, teachers knew how to grade papers. They knew how to give instruction. Students showed up and asked questions. I mean, what do we need Canvas for? I don't get it.
I think part of it is remote learning. I think as, you know, schools have been pivoting to remote learning as they've needed to, and even now when kids don't get snow days anymore because it's just remote learning.
Yeah, but, I mean,
I think another aspect of this is this seems like the exact sort of thing that somebody with a hot craft tech company could go up to a school district and, you know, sell to them like, you know, Springfield being sold the monorail and say, you know, this is going to change everything. This is how you do everything.
Hey, that monorail would have worked, okay, if they didn't let it fall apart.
Yeah, but like, let's tie every single thing you do as a school through this other platform that you don't have direct control over. And let's have all these other schools use it too. Let's centralize everything in one company with one point of failure. And now we're seeing what happens that happens.
The way you say it, it's obvious how bad it is. I'm just wondering, how do instructors and school districts and everybody not see that, you know, as inevitable? Something bad is going to happen. You're giving up something that, you know, basically should be handled locally, not on a national or international level. I don't see the advantage. I'm really trying hard to see it.
But, Emmanuel, if I had to guess, I would say you have not bought into the outsource everything, throw some money at it, and let someone else take care of it mindset that is really taken over so much of the capitalist structure of this country. And if everything is, you don't need to have your own IT staff, we're going to take care of it all for you, and a monthly subscription fee is going to cost a lot less than salary and benefits for an IT staff, you're going to say, hey, this is an opportunity to save a lot of money, not thinking for a moment the kind of security and functionality you're going to be trading away for that financial savings.
And also in this day and age when education is something that's vastly underfunded, teachers are paid a pittance, the job satisfaction in education is, at a low.
Saving all that money, wasn't that supposed to solve those problems or address those problems? It seems like it never does. So then,
it never does. They weren't going to use it to pay teachers.
So then why do it in the first place? If nothing's going to improve, you know, did you believe that things were going to improve when they cut funds? It never works that way. Kyle, you had something. Go ahead.
I was just thinking it's partly probably a liability thing or just that the convenience of such a mixed environment of devices and needs from the student body. And then, of course, all of the other things operationally that the school is managing and maintaining for reference materials in the library or teaching systems and other things that are going on. The demands of people that want to check their grades from the web or from home or on a phone, I think can seem maybe desirable to hire away these services when you have a kind of limited capability and you're already managing a lot of other stuff on campus. And you have these devices coming and going that need to be able to access some of the information that you're coordinating through the operational infrastructure, but a lot of it can be kind of processed and made in kind of a really convenient dashboard for people that log into it from afar, like a student or a parent checking grades or something like that. But I think that they're just cramming all of these features in and packaging it, like was said, from a hot educational tech company that gets a lot of contracts, and then other schools say, okay, that's what they're using. Let's just handle this the way other institutions or districts have set precedent with, and it catches on and then becomes a dominant provider for the for these kinds of services and stuff.
Look, I'm not opposed to dashboards. I'm not. But why do they all have to be connected? Why do you have to have where there's a compromise in the system, everything is affected? Why not just have an isolated compromise that you fix in that particular area? This way, you know, hundreds of millions of students were affected by something that, could have easily been fixed if it was isolated to, say, one school district.
Yeah, and that's the advantage if they were doing it themselves and had, say, they had the resources, used a small contractor, some custom system, or like maybe the other end of the spectrum, some kind of like open, easy to use, customizable, well-maintained project that any school could use. Wow, you know, that would be great too, and it would be something that could be deployed in that, as I was kind of illustrating, complex environment at an academic situation and still be insulated or otherwise not a burden, somewhat safe to use, but not a part of like these big cloud providers that in the scenario I was illustrating would be this rapidly growing educational tech company that's once they do it in one state or one district or one region, they're going to deploy it in just like an assembly line. You know, they'll do the same thing. So then if something is set up wrong and it's all based on that, or it's all failing a certain sort of security step, then it's all then, as you've stated, like totally vulnerable. And that's just the hazard of trusting one entity and at such scale.
Gila, go ahead.
Well, so I was thinking about a couple of things. One of the things I was thinking about while Kyle was speaking was how many parents now need that moment to moment whenever. If I wake up at 2 a.m. and want to know how my kid is doing in school, this way I don't have to reach out to the teacher. I can just hop onto this system. But the other thing is, are these tech companies, are they educational tech companies? Or are they tech companies that are putting on an educational costume to try to use the same solutions that work for multinational organizations and try to say, well, if it works for, I don't know, Meta, why wouldn't it work for Franklin Elementary School?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the crux of it, totally. Like, how in-depth and who is giving this a stamp of approval? Yeah, it may look like it works, but is it well audited? Is it well understood how it's functioning and working in different scenarios?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just kind of the bargain choice, you know, maybe there's a couple red flags in that being the choice, and there should be maybe a little bit more pressure from the people that are using the stuff, e.g., you know, students, faculty, parent-teacher organizations. They have a say in how this stuff's procured, and because they have to use it. And if something breaks or if something's incorrect and flawed, they're at the mercy of it. And this is people trying to matriculate, trying to have work on their academic career, and you're disrupting that ostensibly.
I just don't get how, you know, you wake up at 2 a.m. wanting to know what grade your kid got. Wake up your kid and ask him. Yeah, that's a lot easier than expecting some global corporate entity to be able to tell you and get it right and care. They don't care. That's a guarantee. You know, going to school is it's a community thing. It's a local thing. It should always be a local thing. I'm reading the description here, what Canvas does. It's where schools post assignments, messages, grades, class updates, exam instructions. When did you stop being able to do all that, you know, one-on-one in the classroom? Why even have classrooms anymore, you know? Why not just let this corporation take care of everything? What, do you need teachers? Do you need buildings? It's, you know, it's really pretty pathetic that this, unless this whole thing is part of a class, that we're learning that doing something on this level is bad, it's wrong, and we should never do that again. Maybe that is what this is all about. Maybe that's the lesson that we are all supposed to be learning right now. Well done, Canvas. All right, you taught us something valuable, and everybody cancel your damn Canvas accounts and go back to teaching kids face-to-face. Canterbury University, I believe they're in New Zealand. They were able to avoid all of this. Students at Canterbury University were unaffected because their institutions opted for an open source platform instead, in effect keeping their data in-house rather than relying on a large international company to host their platform. Imagine that. Wow. This student, Asher Wilson Goldman, has 2 weeks left to finish his master's degree. He's a student at Victoria University of Wellington, doing a master's of public management part-time while he works full-time. But that all came to a halt on Friday morning when education platforms worldwide shut down. Worldwide. Think about that. Victoria uses Nuku as a digital learning platform, which is driven by Canvas, which is run by Instructure. And all these crazy words they make up. And that was targeted in the hack by a hacker group known as Shiny Hunters. At least one education technology expert considers it the largest education security breach in history. Don't think it won't be on the test. It will be. Canvas-powered platforms shut down around the world, including Nuku, which means that Wilson Goldman and millions of other students have had to put their semesters on pause, many of which were about to wrap up. Wilson Goldman says the earliest he expects to have Nuku back is next week. But that's after an assignment is due, which has to be submitted via Nuku. Oh, boy. Other students have drafts of their papers or notes stored on the down platform. Why didn't you write it on your own damn laptop? Why are you storing it in the cloud somewhere? In staff emails from the University of Auckland, Associate Dean of Teaching and Learning, Andrew Luxton Riley. Does everybody there have hyphenated names? I think they do. Says they have no estimate for recovery time. It could be hours. It could potentially be days. Instructure was able to get most of Canvas up and running again on Saturday. Wilson Goldman says it's not the educators' fault. He's more worried about their well-being at the moment, but that of the decision-makers who signed up to a multinational provider like Instructure. Yes, amen on that. Instructure has been hacked before last week by the same hackers. Yeah, how about that? It says rather than contact them, Instructure did some security patches before the latest attack. And that's offensive, too, to the people breaking in. Instructure said last week it does not believe passwords, financial records, or government IDs were part of the breach. Whoa, that's a relief, I guess. Wilson Goldman says lecturers have been compelled to use software developed by an international company which couldn't care less about Victoria University. When things go wrong, he thinks we'll be lower on the priority list than flagship universities such as Harvard and Stanford, which were also affected. And you know what? Kindergartens were affected as well. I don't know what kind of assignments you're giving to kindergarten kids that have to be in the cloud, but whatever. Instructure bills itself as the most visited education website in the world. Yeah, it's being visited by hackers all over the planet because you're a wide-open target and easy to compromise, apparently. They claim more than 6 million concurrent users. By users, I believe they mean institutions, because they have hundreds of millions of students. Many of these users were involved in last week's international data breach. Shiny Hunters posted a pay-or-leak demand, threatening to leak information from certain universities unless those universities paid a sum. The information in question included login credentials used by students and staff to access the learning platform, messages, materials stored on the platform, other academic data. That's an indication of how serious it is to those institutions that were victimized by this. Again, if you use something that is not a service like that, the odds of you being victimized, well, it's much lower. Open source approach basically means the data is kept in New Zealand, in this particular case, under New Zealand law, and since each database is isolated, a breach in one area can't spill over into another. Customers have direct control of their data. That's for people who use, or institutions that use, a server or a service known as Moodle, MODLE. It's an open source program, meaning anyone can download the code and run the operation. If you don't have the expertise or time to do that, you can hire a company like New Zealand's Catalyst to do the technical work. But the server is still yours to customize. And I think that is the key here, that it's locally run, and each server has its own policies, its own staff running it, its own rules, and you're not subjected to something like this. Common sense, and I'm surprised that so many of these institutions don't seem to exhibit that. Now, the question of these shiny hunter people, first of all, When you break into a system and you demand payment to release data or give access back, that is not what hacking is. Hacking is figuring out, you know, the weaknesses, absolutely. And, you know, teaching a lesson like this, sure, that's that can be considered an element of hacking. But the greed of wanting money in exchange, that's where you leave me behind. You know, this is something that is not a something that is worthy. It's something that is worth.
Yeah, it's not really a noble.
Noble. That's
honorable way. Yeah,
not honorable. No, it's
to behave.
It's not.
But you're lording something, and
it's important that we learn this lesson, and I think it's an important lesson to teach. And I wish Shiny Hunters had simply taught the lesson and said, okay, don't do that again. Here's your data back. But here's the thing: we're not finding out how much they were paid to give back the 3.5 terabytes of data. This 3.5 terabytes of data, they didn't have another copy of it. They needed Shiny Hunters to give them back the data. You know, and they've given them back the data. Okay, so what makes you think that data is now secure? They proved that they deleted it. How does that look? How do you prove you deleted something? I never understood that. They could still have a copy someplace. You will never know. Once the data is compromised, it's compromised. You have to change your passwords. You have to assume that everything that has been said in that data is there for the public to see at any time, the time of their choosing. You can never trust people who hold something for ransom. You know, if in the case of people being held for ransom, yeah, you get the person back, and that's great. But with data, you can make copies, and it can go anywhere. And it can be used against you. And it's great if you get the data back, but you should have had the data to begin with. You don't even keep a copy for yourself. There were just so many lessons to learn here. And, you know, I just wonder how the students are processing this. You know, people in middle school, high school, they're seeing their institutions fall apart because of these super poor data practices. You know, just abandoning common sense. And, these are the people that are teaching you. I think there needs to be more teaching going on, and not for the students. Rob?
My favorite aspect of all this is the quote-unquote resolution, because, yes, the criminals doing this did get paid off. They won their blackmail money. And in a statement from Instructure, where they're talking about how sorry they are that this happened and trying to reassure their customers, they post on their site, Instructure reached an agreement with the unauthorized actor involved in this incident. As part of that agreement, the data was returned to us. We received digital confirmation of data destruction, parentheses, shred logs, and we'll get back to that. We have been informed that no Instructure customers will be extorted as a result of this incident, publicly or otherwise, and this agreement covers all impacted Instructure customers, and there is no need for individual customers to attempt to engage with the unauthorized actor. So basically they're saying, yes, we paid off the professional blackmailers, and we have their word on the honor system that they're not going to use their professional blackmail material to do more professional blackmailing. You know, shred logs, that's meaningless. You know, you could show someone a screenshot of you saying, you know, DEL whatever file. That doesn't tell you if they've got another copy of it on another drive somewhere. And if you're a professional blackmailer and you've got this zip file that just won you an untold zillion dollars of money from Instructure here, you know, are you just going to delete that, or are you just going to keep that in a drawer in case you want another zillion dollars someday? It's fascinating to think about this all being down to the honor system of, well, they said they won't crime on us anymore.
Well, again, you know, this company shows no common sense whatsoever, so why would they exhibit it here when it comes to trusting people who took your data and held it hostage? But, you know, that's just, okay, I can sort of see now they're hopeless. You can just get them to do anything you want. Shining Hunters did, like I said before, it needed to be done to prove a point. That wasn't the reason they were doing it, unfortunately. I wish it was, because this is such a valuable lesson to be taught, that this is a bad idea, and this is why it's a bad idea. And I guess, you know, they feel that their efforts should be compensated in one form or another. I'm not going to get involved in that, but when something like this exists, when everybody is convinced to abandon your local institutions and trust some faceless corporation someplace, I think it's on everybody with a brain to figure out how to compromise that and to display that, to show that, and say, this is a bad idea, this is why it's a bad idea. And I just don't see that lesson being learned. I see these institutions going right back to what they were doing, and it's going to happen again, whether it's Shiny Hunters or somebody else. You know, they're still making the same mistakes. And it's not just schools. It's almost everything you can imagine. We have to take a good look at you know, the changes we're making with technology and make smart changes, not stupid changes over and over again, where we just trust these monoliths to do everything for us. What's the matter with us doing the work ourselves, with us deciding the policies ourselves, with, dare I say it, things being different from one place to another? You know, this school district does something this way, this one does it a different way. This one teaches this class, this one does not. You know, they basically, there are different interpretations of history, of language, all kinds of subject material. That is what makes us unique, and that's what makes us learn from each other. But when everything is just homogenized, and given to this instructor entity, whatever it is, I mean, who are these people? Does anybody know who they are? What are their qualifications? Do they have any? This is what's deciding what our children learn, what people in college are learning. It's nuts. It's madness. And for that reason, I'm glad it happened. I really am. I'm glad this happened. Give them a black eye. Show them that this is not the way things should be. And any school district that runs back to them, they deserve what they get. You know, you're not learning the lesson. You should have to repeat whatever year you're in. That's how it works.
Also, Shiny Hunters is just one organized crime group doing this sort of thing. There are countless others. And now all those other ones know that here, Instructure is, has a history of paying the money. And, you know, so this company, this product is going to be on all of their radars now.
Well, you know, we should have the right to know how much money was paid. You know, I think anybody who uses this particular service, and I'm putting that in air quotes, they deserve to know how much of their money was used to address this mistake, this massive mistake. And I think any institution should have the option to cancel whatever contract they are in based on, I guess, what is new information to them, not new information if you've been listening to this radio show. Speaking of which, you won't be able to listen to this radio show very much longer because we only have a minute left, but you can write to this radio show, OTH at 2600.com, OTH at 2600.com. You can also hear us continue the conversation and take phone calls, where we'll be talking about the Hope Conference and all kinds of other hacker issues. That'll be on YouTube at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It's about 10 minutes from now. Just go to channel 2600, channel 2600 on YouTube, or click on the link that's on the 2600.com webpage. Also, if you can support WBAI, where this radio show has aired since 1988, that would be great. Keep us on the air. Keep us going. Keep us saying all kinds of things without fear of censorship. Go to WBAI.org or buddy.WBAI.org or give to WBAI.org. Pledge whatever you can afford. And we look forward to seeing you again next week on these airwaves here at 99.5 FM. And please continue to listen to WBAI, as you'll find all kinds of interesting programming throughout the course of the week. See you at 8 o'clock on YouTube. See you next week here on WBAI. Good night.
Just the way it is. Oh yeah.